In high school, I really wanted to be captain of my volleyball team. Now, I wouldn't have admitted it at the time, because in high school, you're not supposed to say what you want, right? But I wanted it. Now, I knew that I wasn't the best player on the volleyball team. That was clear to me. We had a player who was about 14 feet tall, and he could jump another couple yards. And so his name was Dan, and he was clearly, hands down, everybody knew Dan was the best player on the team. But I had this kind of thought that I offered some kind of leadership to the team. You know, I wasn't the strongest player, but I was a decent player, and I was kind of able to rally people. I had some energy that I brought to the team, and I thought, maybe my teammates will recognize that, and maybe I'll be voted captain. I think I thought that if I could be captain, then that kind of leadership, whatever it was that I could offer, it'd somehow be validated. You know, I wanted that title, that position, to make me know for sure that what I offered was valuable. I think I felt in some ways like if I weren't the captain, then I couldn't be a leader. What does it mean to be a leader? How are leaders supposed to act? What about in a church setting? Is leadership in here any different than leadership in the world? And how should churches be structured, be organized? What's the formal structure of a church? This morning, we're continuing our PBC DNA series, and we're talking about the topic of leadership. And this has been one of the things that has made this church fairly unique. The way that we view leadership around here is pretty different than the way a lot of people view leadership. The way that God has revealed himself in scriptures, the way we read the Bible, we kind of uncover some general principles that seem clear to us about leadership. And then those few principles filter out through the various areas of our church, whether it's formal leadership or the way that we lead activities or structure programs or whatever. So we're going to talk about some of those themes. We're going to kind of try to get a general sense of our philosophy of leadership. And then we're going to talk about some of the ways that those philosophies play out in practical terms. Our goal is to just have kind of an overall understanding of the way leadership works around here. And if we're going to pick one term, the best term really to understand how we view leadership is shared leadership. So we're going to talk about our shared leadership. Now, leadership is always, in every place, in every time, an important issue. But there are some unique things going on in our culture today that make leadership particularly important for us to get our minds around and to understand how God views leadership and what that looks like for us. Leadership in government is always a huge issue, and it continues to be so. We've had recent questions about leaders in our entertainment industry. We've had backlash that I've been reading about the type of leadership style that's exerted in Silicon Valley. And church leaders are always under scrutiny for the way that they operate. We need to learn about leadership. We need to understand how it is that God leads. What does it mean with the way that God acts towards us? And what does that say about how we might act? So we need to get our minds around an understanding of leadership, but even more importantly, we need to be freed up, be inspired, be given a vision for what it looks like for each of us to step into leadership. We don't just need to understand leadership. I think the most critical thing that each of us has to offer is some way of leading in this community. So that's my prayer for you this morning, that as you think about these ideas, that as you engage with them, that God would be stirring in you, giving you a sense of how you might step in, how you might offer yourself to this community. We're going to see that this doesn't just have to do with our church, with our organization. It has to do with our hearts. It has to do with our relationship with God. And it changes the way we lead in all sorts of settings, our families, our communities, our schools, our professions. When we really get a grasp for what it looks like to lead in Jesus' style of leadership, everything changes. So let's start by looking at a basic principle of biblical leadership. Now, it's hard to pick a single passage to form an entire philosophy around, but we're going to go to this passage where Jesus talks about what he thinks of leadership, at least as a starting point, and we're going to draw a few ideas from that. So let's listen to Mark 10. We'll read 42 to 45. That's Mark 10, verses 42 to 45. Jesus is talking with his disciples, and this is where he picks up. And Jesus called them to him, that is his disciples, and said to them, "You know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But it shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." When we evaluate leaders in our culture, how do we decide whether they are good leaders? What makes a leader good in our world? I think usually we evaluate them on what they produce, what they achieve, what have they accomplished. We evaluate them by their outcome. And we have some incredible leaders, especially in this area, leaders that are coming up with ridiculous innovations that no one has ever thought of. Leaders that are able to form and lead massive organizations on a single purpose. Leaders that have produced things that literally have changed the world in less than a generation, changed relationships and culture and self-identity. We have leaders around us that have accomplished an incredible amount. But does that make them a good leader? What makes a leader good? We have effective leaders, we have productive leaders, we have accomplished leaders, but are they good? Jesus looks at the leaders of his day. Some of them have accomplished a great deal. Some of them are very effective. And he tells his disciples, "It shall not be so among you." Look at the way people in the world lead, and I'm telling you that in my kingdom, when you follow Jesus, leadership looks different. It looks different from what you see around you. Even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. Now, 2,000 years later, it's a little bit interesting. The term servant leadership has finally caught on. You can find servant leadership talked about in prestigious MBA programs. You can find secular leadership books talking about servant leadership. So this idea that seems to come from this passage that leaders ought to be servant leaders, maybe it has filtered out into the world. But I think that when most people talk about servant leadership, this is what they mean. They mean that leaders who have power should use that power for the sake of others, not for themselves. If you are in some position of authority, you have a responsibility for the people that you lead to look out for their best interests, not your own. Now, that's a great thing. That's absolutely true. It's a very important thing for leaders to learn. But I don't think it's exactly what Jesus is getting at here. I think it just scratches the surface of what he's saying. He says, "Whoever would be first among you must be slave of all." Those are strong words. I think Jesus isn't even talking about positions and titles and authority structures. I think he's talking about some way of viewing leadership that transcends all that, some way of viewing leadership that equips us, that empowers us as individuals to offer ourselves as servants to each other. Jesus' leadership isn't about being called a certain thing or having some type of authority over another person. What if Jesus means that everybody is actually supposed to serve each other? Not just have each other's interests in mind, but to offer ourselves up, to give ourselves, to sacrifice ourselves for the sake of another. Leadership, I think, is about initiative. It's about risk. It's about stepping forward. It's about seeing a gap and offering yourself to fill that gap, about stepping into something, not just saying, you know what this church needs to do, blah, 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 blah. It's saying, I'm going to do what I can to make this happen. Or the world needs to be like this versus what can I do to contribute to this change? So I think Jesus' leadership is about putting yourself out there, and it's a risky, scary endeavor. But that's servant leadership. And what that means is that it's open to all of us. It's open to every single person here to offer yourself up, to step into some role, to give of yourself for the sake of the community. There might only be a few positions of authority, but there's plenty of opportunity to serve everywhere you look. Every single one of us is a leader. We're all called to serve. All of us do it, which means that we share the task of leadership together. We share leadership. This is our most basic call. We serve and we lead together. Serve, lead together. Now, I need to make you aware of a terrible lie that most people believe, and it has destroyed organizations. It has destroyed individuals. It makes ambition turn into competition. It turns achievement into pride. Here's what most people think. Most people think that leadership is like ice cream. Am I right? Clearly, right? Let me explain. I love ice cream. Some of you know this about me. I mean, a lot of people like ice cream, but, you know, without tooting my own horn. I mean, I take it to a new level. Just, you only had to be in my living room last night to see the kind of level I take eating ice cream to. So here's what will happen to my family. You know, we'll get a carton of ice cream as a family, and, you know, we'll line out. We have five kids, so we'll line out the bowls and start scooping it. And, you know, the goal is to make it equal, right? Everybody gets the same amount of ice cream. But here's what I'm thinking. With every scoop that goes into a bowl that's not mine, I think, that's another scoop that I don't get. That's a scoop of ice cream that I'm not going to eat. And I wish I could. I really do. So I get my bowl of ice cream, but I look at all the ice cream that my beloved children and spouse get, and I wish I could eat their ice cream. Now, this is how we are trained to think about leadership. See, we think that leadership is like a carton of ice cream. And I'll give you a scoop. You can have this much leadership, but no more. And any leadership that you have means I have less. And any leadership that the person next to you has means that's some scoop of leadership that you don't have access to. There's only a finite amount of leadership, and we have to dole it out carefully and make sure that the right people get the right amount. But that's not what Jesus is talking about. I think leadership is more like water. So if you were to come to my house and you were to ask for a glass of water, I will happily give you a glass of water. No jealousy at all. If you ask for a second cup of water, I'll give you a second cup of water. Third, fourth, fifth, you can have 100 cups of water at my house. And I have no problem with that. Because I'm never worried about water running out. Now, maybe I should be. So, you know, there are practical limitations to this example, but that's what leadership is like. I'm not worried about leadership running out, about not having enough to go around. There are always plenty of opportunities to lead in the kingdom of God. There's always ways to step in, to offer yourself, to lay yourself down, to see a hole, step into it, with courage and fearfulness, but confidence in what God is doing. In the kingdom of God, there is no shortage of leadership opportunities. And I think that's what makes this church an amazing church. Lots of churches, but you know, this is where I've seen this play out, that people step in and they offer themselves. We just came back last weekend from a men's retreat, and we had people, almost everybody there was doing something in some way. We had people leading worship. We had people speaking, people emceeing and leading games and sharing testimonies and giving little TED-style talks and small group leading. And I saw guys reaching out to guys that were having a hard time and, hey, do you want to go hang out and do this? I saw leadership everywhere. So it was a retreat full of servants. It was a retreat full of leaders. Everybody pitching in, serving and leading each other. So that simple idea that biblical leadership is about shared servant leadership, that forms the basis for a lot of the ways that we think of leadership around here as a church. Leadership isn't focused on one group of people. It's not focused on titles or positions. It's something we all do, and it's something we all offer. Now, we're serious when we say that this is the way our church runs. We run on the leadership of the community as a whole. But that's not to say that we don't have some formal structure, and we do have some positions and some titles because organizations need that. So it's helpful to understand a little bit about how we run in terms of a formal structure. And in particular, one of the things that makes us unique is the way that we've implemented this idea of shared leadership is not to have a single lead pastor or senior pastor, one person at the top of a pyramid that makes all the decisions, that flows down the organization. Rather, we have teams of shared leaders. And so we have elders that are a team of people that make the kinds of leadership decisions that in a lot of organizations a single person might make. Now, in general, the New Testament has more guidance about what kinds of people ought to be leaders than what exactly those leaders ought to do. The New Testament is very concerned with the character and the connection with Christ of leaders in the church, and doesn't give a lot of lists of job descriptions, but there are some indications of what kinds of things elders ought to do in a church. So I want to look at 1 Peter for a moment to get a grasp on what elders do in a church. This is 1 Peter 5, 1 to 4, and I'll read it. This is Peter speaking to the church that he's writing to, and he says, "So I exhort the elders among you, as a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory." You know, it's been eye-opening for me when I've traveled to places like Africa and India to see actual shepherds. This is a dominant image all throughout Scripture. We have all these ideas of speaking of shepherds, and here we're told that elders are to shepherd the flock of God, but we don't really have shepherds in Palo Alto and Mountain View and Sunnyvale. In Africa, I've seen shepherds mostly being younger boys, 12 years old, 14 years old, guiding their flock of sheep or goats along the road, usually kind of into town for market day. And it struck me that being a shepherd in this culture is not an elevated position. It's the first job you get. You know, it's the kind of basic thing. And in ancient Near East, shepherds were dirty. They were rough. They were outsiders. In the first century, they lived on the outskirts of the community. They were almost outcasts. And yet, shepherds are tasked with this incredible responsibility. In Africa, for instance, your flock, your animals are your livelihood. So to send your flock with your 12-year-old son to market is like me, you know, you're somebody saying, "Here's my entire stock portfolio. Would you take this to school with you and make sure not to lose it," right? I mean, this is a huge responsibility. Animals are the economy of a community. And so being a shepherd isn't a glamorous thing, but it's a critical thing. It's incredibly important. And so Peter says that elders are to shepherd the flock of God. Elders shepherd the flock of God. Our role is to look out for things, to care for the flock, to have some type of oversight, to make sure that things don't go astray. It's to guide and to feed and to protect and to care for. One of our elders recently emailed out a letter he dug up from Ray Stedman talking about what elders are supposed to be. This line stuck out to me among the letters. Ray said that elders are to deliberately refuse to get involved in solving what you call practical problems, the nuts and bolts of running a church. And instead, Ray goes on to give three basic tasks of elders. He says they should focus on studying and teaching the Bible, prayer, and seeking the will of Christ for the church. Now, that can be difficult, to be honest. In fact, just this past Monday, we had our regular elders meeting on Monday, and our elders meetings always start with a time of study and prayer, which, by the way, is open to everybody. The first part, the majority of the elders meetings at PBC are open to anybody who wants to come. So email one of us, find out the schedule, and feel free to come and sit in and hear how things go. But in this particular day, we had a couple of what I thought were important things to discuss, but we started with praying and studying the Bible. And honestly, there's a little bit of me that says, you know, can't we get on to the real stuff? We need to talk about these things. We need to go on to what's really important. But then I remember passages like this and think, no, this is what's important. Studying and praying. Because if we are to seek the mind of Christ, if that's our goal, how do we do it apart from prayer and the word? The last sentence of this passage makes this point really clear. That elders are only to serve under the guidance of Jesus. It says, until the chief shepherd appears. This is why prayer and study is critical, because the elders are here. They serve among the flock, but this church does not belong to the elders. The elders are not in charge. The flock doesn't belong to the shepherd. Shepherds watch over things, but there's usually somebody else that owns those animals. And in our case, that's true too. When the New Testament speaks of the church and talks about the church as a body, the head of the body is not the senior pastor or the lead pastor or the elders or any of us. The head of the body is Jesus himself. This is Jesus's church. He's in charge. Any leadership any of us offer in any capacity is always under the ultimate authority of Jesus. So elders are just part of the body, and they serve as under shepherds, serving under Jesus, trying to understand his will for what to do. This is one of the reasons why decisions of the elders have to be unanimous. So everybody in the room has to agree on a certain decision, because the idea is that any one of us can get it wrong, but if this is where Jesus is leading us, then he's going to do it together. He's going to convince all of us. His spirit will move in each of us, and we'll be aligned in direction. Elders shepherd. This is our role, and we shepherd the flock of God, not our own flock, but the one that belongs to God. So we've talked about kind of this basic philosophy of leadership. We spent a little time thinking about what elders do in particular, and I want to at least kind of explain some of the other structures that we have at the church so that that becomes a little clear. Our three primary positions are elders, pastors, and deacons. Those are kind of the primary titles we have around here, with the caveat that we have to have titles but realize that's not really, those aren't descriptive of all the leaders. Now, we currently have 9 elders. That number can differ. It usually ranges from 9 to 12, 13, 14, somewhere in that range. Elders serve an indefinite term. That's not the same as a life sentence, but, you know, you can interpret it. It just means that elders, once they become an elder, serve until they feel that God has called them out of that. They retire or move on or life circumstances change. Historically, our biblical interpretation has been that elders are only men. That's our current practice. Currently, we've had some discussion on that, and there is some diversity on how to understand the Bible in that area, but without unanimity to change, that continues to be our current practice. Most of the elders are lay people. They're not employed by the church. They're volunteers that serve. There's 3 of us, myself, Scott Grant, and Andy Burnham, that serve as elders and paid pastors. Now, the idea of paid pastors is a little bit of an interesting thing too. See, we generally understand that pastoring is a spiritual gift. Pastoring people refers to this idea of kind of shepherding a smaller group of people, some demographic, or offering leadership in some capacity. And so we have people that are on staff at the church that are paid as pastors, but there are far more pastors in this church than people with that title. Did you hear that? There are way more pastors in this church than people who are called pastor, because it's a gift that really any of us can offer to some community. The paid pastors are those people who the church, the elders have recognized and said, these people, we're going to ask them to do this full time, and we're going to pay their salaries so that they can do that. But pastoring is not just something that a professional does. It's any of us, small group leaders, ministry team leaders, anybody that shepherds other people. That's what pastoring is. Our third position is that of deacons. We have over 30 deacons here at PBC. They serve in a kind of a wide variety of ways, generally meeting kind of specific, concrete, practical needs, stepping into areas of the church that need help in certain ways, IT, finance, needs, cooking, being aware of the needs. They're kind of distributed throughout the body so people know them and they can kind of have their pulse on what's going on. We have elders, we have pastors, and we have deacons, but there's 100 other ways that people lead around here as well. There are ministry directors who work alongside pastors. We have support staff in our office for things like accounting and graphic design. We have small group leaders. We have ministry teams. We have facility management. We have volunteer Sunday school teachers and youth workers and counselors and people that are mentoring other people. You get the picture? There's thousands of ways. There's infinite ways to step in and lead. There are some titles and there are some structures, but the idea is that everybody can contribute in different ways. So we're grateful. We feel like God has been good to us. God has blessed this church for 70 years now. We hope that he continues to bless it. And we believe in this idea of shared leadership. We believe in elder leadership. But mostly, we believe that all our leadership is only as good as our following of Jesus. I was talking to someone a few years ago, and this person was trying to find the best career fit. He'd served in various positions, and he said this to me that struck me. He said, you know, I'm just not good at following someone else. I work best when I'm in charge. And I thought, yeah, don't we all? But I also thought, you know, that might work for various positions. There might be places where that's a good mentality, but not at our church. See, one of the things that we believe, because we believe in shared leadership, is that if you can't be a follower around here, you could never be a leader. Leading always involves submitting. Jesus is our real leader. All of us are following him together as a community. So any of our leadership, whether it's formal or informal, whether it's just talking to somebody in the patio or organizing some event or anything, all of that has its source in Jesus, and all of it points back to Jesus. So this is what we do. We follow Jesus and we lead each other. We follow Jesus and we lead each other. Follow, lead, repeat. Think about going on a hike. Someone's at the front of the hike, right? You're on a trail, you're on a line of people. Someone's on the hike, presumably leading the way. But they're only as good of a leader as whatever it is they're following, right? Maybe they've been on that trail before, so they know it. Maybe they have a map. Maybe they have a GPS. Maybe they have talked to somebody who said, oh yeah, turn left at the big tree. You know, whatever it is, they're only as good a leader as whatever it is they're following. And we believe that around here. A few years ago, we had shirts printed up for our Summer Leadership Institute, which is one of our programs where we bring in a bunch of college students and pay them for the summer and have them do ministry and train them and teach them. Applications are open right now, actually, if you know of any college students that are interested. But these particular shirts, on the front, they said follower, and on the back, they said leader. So if you're in front of them and you look back, you think, oh yeah, that person's a follower. But if you're behind them, you look forward and you say, that person's a leader. That's kind of how we view about how we view leadership around here. We're all following and we're all leading. That's how we work together. So as we follow Jesus, we lead each other. And what that means is that somehow this whole thing fits together. Now, we're not so naive, though, to think that, hey, if we just follow Jesus, if we just pray before every meeting, then everything's going to work out. You know, this isn't some kind of spiritual platitude to say, like, as long as Jesus is at the center, then everything will be fine, and we don't have to worry about anything else. Following Jesus means something. It means that we sacrifice ourselves. It means that we take this seriously. And one of the things it means is that we submit to each other. That's one of the unique things about leading around here. See, in most organizations, as you move up the leadership chain, your kind of balance of like, I have to lead and I have to submit, moves more towards leadership. So if you get to the way top, you don't have to submit anymore. And that's why a lot of people want to be at the top. Because honestly, submission is hard. We don't like to submit. And so you want to get kind of climb the leadership chain so you can stop submitting. But around here, everybody is submitting. And if we're following Jesus, then what that means is that we're submitting to each other. That's what following Jesus looks like in practice. The New Testament is clear about this. Paul instructs the church at Ephesus to submit to one another. Why? Out of reverence for Christ. Following Jesus means that we submit to one another. So elders have to submit to other elders. Pastors have to submit to other pastors. Pastors submit to elders. Sometimes elders submit to pastors. Sometimes deacons submit to small group leaders. And draw the direction wherever you want. See, leadership flows in all directions here. It's not as if there's some tree and leadership only flows down and submission only flows up. Leadership and submission go together. They're not opposites. And the truth is that as you step into a leadership position, as you offer yourself as a leader, that's going to teach you to submit. And as you learn to submit and as you learn to follow Jesus and lay down your own life, you become a better leader. And that can sometimes make this a hard place to be. You know, as an elder and a pastor here, there are plenty of things that happen around this church where I think, boy, I really wish that weren't happening that way. But I submit to my fellow elders or to pastors. And I trust, you know, it may not make sense to me, but I'm going to trust. I'm going to follow Jesus and trust that Jesus is leading this person and that it's going to work out. And I'll submit to them, even when it's difficult, even when it's challenging. Around here, everyone leads and everyone submits. This is what it looks like to follow Jesus. That's what it looks like that Jesus is the head of this church. Now, I said I really wanted to be the captain of my volleyball team. And you may have guessed that I was not the captain of my volleyball team. Our 14-foot Dan was rightfully so voted to be the captain of our volleyball team. And I think, that stung a little bit. I think I had the sense that that meant my leadership wasn't important, that actually I was wrong about what I could offer this team. But that's not true. I don't think I could necessarily see it at the time. But I was able to offer whatever it was that I was able to offer because everybody in the team could offer some kind of leadership in some way. It wasn't the title. It wasn't the position that made it special. It was, what do I have? What has God given me? And what can I offer my community? This is how we think about leadership at PBC. Everything looks different when you're following Jesus. It's not about recognition. It's not about who knows. It's not about how many followers you have. It's about, are you following Jesus? And are you laying down yourself for the sake of the community? So think about that. What might that look like for you? Are there ways that you feel the Spirit stirring in you to offer yourself, to step into some role, to implement something, to volunteer, to step forward? What might that be? Some of the best things that have happened at this church are just because somebody said, hey, I see God doing this, and I'm willing to run with it. Is there something like that for you? We lead, all of us, together. We submit, all of us, together. Our chief shepherd is Jesus, and he will return, and he will lead in a visible, practical way. But for now, he guides us, and he leads us as a community, as our head. And somehow, by the grace of God, he pulls it all together. Now, we don't have it figured out. Our structure isn't perfect. It doesn't save us. We haven't stumbled upon the magic formula that will make sure we're okay. We're doing our best, and we're trusting that God's at work here, that what has sustained this church for 7 decades is the grace of God, and what will continue to sustain it is his grace and his guidance and his leadership. So jump in. Lead, submit, serve, follow, do it again. Let's lead and follow Jesus together. Amen.